This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
This morning on The Grill, I am talking to Alexander Fernandez, the chief executive of Streamline Media Group, which is a gaming company said to be the biggest in Southeast Asia. Now, Alexander, let's start at the start where all good stories begin. Let's talk about your transition from your early starts in Amsterdam, and you upped sticks and moved out to Kuala Lumpur, 2010. What happened there?
Yeah, no problem. Well, good morning, everyone. Well, we came out to Malaysia back, actually. The first time I arrived here was in 2009. I was brought out here on invitation by the MDEC to come and see the development of the animation and games industry. Came out here, immediately fell in love with the people and the food, which generally seems to happen to most people when they come here. And realistically, what had happened is the economic crisis had hit in 2008 and 2009, and basically we were looking for a new place to relocate to that had talent and had the capability of growing into what we believe was going to be the future of games.
So it's a global gaming business. I mean, it's a global huge business, $139 billion, said to be bigger in totality than the NFL, the NHL, the online music streaming services. And it's the biggest new industry since, even bigger than marijuana. So it's said to be. I don't know whether that's true.
I wonder about that, too. How do they actually measure the officiality of that? Do they actually, go out there and talk to the planters? I'm not sure.
Well, your guess is as good as mine. But, Alexander, talk to me about the size of the gaming industry. Why and how did it get this big?
Yeah, so basically it's interesting because the games industry right now basically has different forecasts. So from $139 billion set to grow to $200 billion by the end of the year. Effectively, what's happened here is a demographic shift. A lot of people who play games, the average age being now 41 years old, have been growing up with medium since they were kids.
Can you repeat that? 41 years old?
The average age of a video game player is 41 years old.
That sounds anomalous.
No, so here's what happened. Think about it this way. I was 7 years old when I got my first Nintendo. It was 1987, or actually 88, so you can already think I'm 38 years old. So my generation actually grew up with a console. The generation before me, the people who are basically the forebears of the games industry, well, they were hippies and probably having a good time with the crop that they were growing over there, and basically they created games.
At that time, illegal, now illegal.
At the time, correct. Nah. Keep on going. Yeah. And basically what ends up happening is basically they get into a situation where the games industry, which goes from being kind of a hobbyist, kind of the subculture, counterculture type of industry, started to evolve rather quickly. And effectively what's happened now is that an entire generation has grown up with video games. I remember getting one. Now there are people who it's always been, just like how television and film have been there for our parents or radio was for their grandparents. That is what's happened. It has taken over the culture and has become the de facto medium for people to entertain themselves and actually also learn.
Yeah, so you mentioned MDEC, right? And MDEC, of course, is the digital agency in Malaysia, quasi-government, I think. Malaysia has identified gaming as one of the forebears of its economic growth going forward. How does Malaysia plug into this? How does Malaysia get good at this?
Yeah, so
for such an industry which is as mature as this?
Yeah, so here's the thing. I mean, for the video games industry making so much money, I mean, realistically, we're 40 years old as an industry. So the reality is we haven't been along here that much. On top of that, we also have the opportunity that Southeast Asia, and specifically Malaysia, has made investments basically in 1993 and 94 when they decided to create the MDEC. They were investing into the future. If you really think about this, this is like a 30-year plan. 30 years ago, they basically decided they're going to create this organization that's effectively going to invest into the development of kids, into technology, and creating knowledge workers. Well, that generation is now working in my office right now, and this is the reason why Malaysia has the leg up over most countries here in Southeast Asia. They made the investment back in the 90s. Those kids are now working, and it just so happens now that the video games industry is a culmination of art, design, code, and engineering, and technology all meeting together at one place. And Malaysians are super talented from a creative aspect and from a tech aspect, as well as from an understanding of consumer insight. They grow up with technology now, so this is what makes them very effective at it.
Well, what seems incongruous, Alexander, a little bit, is the fact that MDEC started back in the day when the MSC was very much de rigueur in the late 90s. But what is a bit strange is, even though now it's 20 years later, talent is still an issue. And when I see some of the Glassdoor remarks on Streamline, talent and positions still get, there's difficulty filling them because there's not enough good talent. What's going on?
So here's the thing. You got to basically remember what good talent really means is that in the end of the day, there's craft, meaning my ability to do my job, and there's my personality, my ability to control myself and actually be a workable person. And this is not just a Malaysian issue. This is an issue around the world. The video games industry in itself is facing a severe talent shortage because of the fact that it's such a fast-moving industry and it's growing so expansively that we are now facing competition from other sectors that are leveraging or desire to leverage video game technology. technology. So what that effectively means is the following, is that specifically in Malaysia, you have a population of, let's call it 35 million, 40 million, if you want to be generous about it, that are there. Half of them are under 30 years old. Their skills are coming up now, but let's be very clear about actually learning how to do something. It's applied knowledge. This isn't something you go to school and really relatively learn how to do. You might learn the basics, but the reality is that you have to practice at what you do. Again and again, you keep doing and keep working on your craft, and that's what allows you to actually get the job to move forward. Now, in the end of the day, what we need are employers that actually help and support the actual development of talent and skills in this industry. That's one of the reasons why MDEC has this thing called Digital Ninja, which is effectively identifying youth in their 13, 14, and 15 years old to basically find people that have the proclivity for technology and design, which is what's helping us as an industry actually get more talent in. But let me not shine it up. I mean, the reality is that you're still looking for people, but in the end of the day, it's not that dire.
So here's the thing with Streamline. You don't actually build games per se. You work on games that are already in development. So how does your model work essentially? I think you're a producer to the producers. Is that right?
Well, okay. So here's the thing. When we originally started our company, we were actually making our own original products. And then basically our services division allowed us to generate revenue, which created profit that we then reinvested back into products. We still do that. We actually just announced a new product of ours called Bacon Switch, which goes into early access this October. Effectively, that is 100% developed, created, art engineered and designed here in Malaysia. But our major part of our revenue is derived by our services business that works for publishers and developers around the world, basically producers and creators of some of the biggest IPs in the world, from Gears of War, Street Fighter V, to Final Fantasy XV. And they come to us and say, listen, we need help. We need people who are capable of art, engineering, and design, people who know how to make games. We need you to come and help us finish our projects. And in exchange for doing so, we're going to pay you pretty well. And what we're going to do then is basically go on from project to project. Think of it like how you do film production or how you do television production. The reality is that there's above the line and below the line talent. What Streamline effectively does is a combination of above and below the line talent for studios and companies that are requiring to get their project shipped at a certain time.
So who are some of your biggest clients?
People like Capcom and Square Enix, Sony. I've done work for Nintendo, so we've done quite a bit over the years.
There's other names like EA, BioWare, Epic, Riot Games, Telltale. Some of these are the biggest names.
Yeah, they're some of the biggest names, absolutely. Epic Games especially.
Yeah, do you work with any of these?
Yeah, Epic Games specifically. I mean, we've been supporting the guys over at Epic since they were 40 people in 2001. We're one of the first studios to ever use Unreal outside of their company.
Okay, so how does the relationship work? They begin product and then they work with you to finish it off. And how much of their, say, work culture transcends into your space in Malaysia?
Yeah, so here's the thing. For a lot of these studios that you work with and a lot of developers, it all starts off with a relationship. I mean, the reality is that a lot of these people I have known for the past 20 years of my career. But generally, it always starts over with meeting someone and just clicking with them. And generally, what happens is that we're all nerds. We're nerdy gamers. We're people who love technology and who love the actual craft of making games. So we sit down, we jam, we talk about what they're working on. They tell me what they're doing. We talk about projects that are 2 years away. Sometimes it's literally going to be released in the next 6 months. And they say, hey, listen, Alexander, I need assistance. Can you help me? Now, how it translates over is that we start building those relationships and then basically having our teams meet each other, kind of like dating. And then what ends up happening at one moment in time is they say, hey, listen, I need your help right now. We jump in and we start working and we start to basically combine our different processes and techniques together. And ultimately, that creates a new working environment. So we get a little of how they work, we get a little bit of how we work, and we bring it together and create something quite new.
So how does the collaboration work in real terms, right? What are the platforms on which you collaborate? And how important is, say, infrastructure like digital internet speeds and reliability of this infrastructure?
That's a really good question. So, and to be honest with you, what ended up happening is that because this industry is so new, a lot of the platforms for collaboration did not exist.
But you said it's 40 years old.
Yeah, but it's not new. I mean, I'm 38. Think about it. It's 2 years older than me. I mean, just do the math. So, I mean, the reality is right now what happened is that a lot of this technology and infrastructure that we are working on right now has only come into existence in the last 10 to 15 years. For instance, we had to create a platform for collaboration called Streamframe that allows us to work with our customers around the world. The only way we could actually work with them was by creating a place where we could actually provide transparency and collaboration, as well as all of the actual process steps that are required to work when you don't see someone right next to you on a day-to-day basis. That didn't exist. We had to make it. And it didn't exist because the people who could make it want to make games, and the people who've never made games try to make technology and software solutions that don't actually solve our needs.
So how good is the money? It's a $140 billion global gaming industry. How good is the money to you, and what does that mean for the Malaysian economy?
Well, I mean, yeah.
And what are the margins like?
Okay, so you want to know, do we make money? Yes. Like all businesses, you make money. And the thing is, you got to understand, like, this is knowledge business. You guys just had a segment over earlier today about people needing to save money, being able to actually effectively invest in their retirement, because who knows if there's going to be a retirement fund in the future. And, you know, I'm from America where there is no retirement fund. We have no Social Security that's viable of anything. So the reality is basically working in an economy and in an industry in which the gig economy is carefully creeping in. Ultimately, what that leads to is basically this, is that those with craft, those with skill, those with capability are able to market themselves and effectively get the rate they need to have. In the video games industry, we are in a very fortuitous position that the knowledge and skills that are required to do these games are transcending into other industries as digital transformation takes over those industries. So what generally tends to happen is that the employees are making, and in this case even myself, are making above average of what your most normal person working in technology makes. With that said, there are basically the realities that we are in a creative industry. This is not basically, I'm not going out there working for IBM, which is very old school. I'm not working for Facebook. I'm not working for Google. I'm making games. So there's a trade-off between passion, making games, or effectively working, you know, being in the slave ship and basically doing just programming for someone over in New Delhi.
So very quickly, right, how big is the animation and digital, well, gaming business to the Malaysian economy now? And you what can it be? I'm not sure whether you're the right person.
Yeah,
well,
actually,
what can it be in, say, 3 years' time?
Well, it was interesting because I was reading this thing. They were talking about basically the total exports in Malaysia to the rest of the world. And if I look at just the ones I know from the games industry right now, I mean, this thing is, in terms of U.S. dollars, looking at it right now, I mean, I think that they're making close to 100 million U.S. right now is what the Malaysian industry is making, at least in exports of services, not including the games people are buying, not including the platforms that are being sold. So it's a tremendous amount of revenue that's being generated, and that's continuing to grow because other industries, and more importantly, the games industry is looking towards Malaysia and Southeast Asia, not only as a place to get talent, but also a market in which it can actually sell its products to, which is very unique. Right now, Southeast Asia is the fastest growing games industry in the world. It's roughly around $2.5 billion in value. That's estimated to grow to over $4 billion within the next 18 months. Then on top of that, you have the fact that most of the actual human capital, the resources that are coming into this market, are coming from this area as well. This is something that has not been seen since probably post-war United States and Europe, where you have such a labor force ready to jump into a market that is seemingly growing very quickly.
I'm talking this morning to Alexander Fernandez, the chief executive of the gaming production company Streamline Media Group, said to be the largest in Southeast Asia. We're going to come back after this, Alexander, with what is said to be the dark side of the industry. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Let's hear that one.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Alexander Fernandez, the chief executive of the gaming production company Streamline Media Group, said to be the largest in Southeast Asia, with me on the grill this morning. Now, the numbers are big, Alexander. You and I have established that with the billions, not the millions. And it's one of the fastest growing in the world, as you say.
Yeah.
But it all comes at a price. And some of the information that have been emanating from the industry are the working conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the stakes, and they are high, the timelines are tight. It's almost sweatshop-like. And I think the industry term is crunch. Now, crunch is, of course, the concept of working way, way, way overtime to meet deadlines. Ruthless worker burnout is the other term I hear a lot of.
Yeah.
How much of that exists in Malaysia, and how much of that exists with Streamline?
This is interesting. Well, okay, so I think we need to break it down into three really core pieces here. Much of the time that you hear about crunch is emanating from the fact that poor project planning, poor scheduling, poor project actually development and vision is actually carried out in the industry. Again, it's relatively young. It's in a situation where basically people are doing their best, but unfortunately sometimes your best isn't good enough. Now, what that turns into is basically this. No one's working in a labor camp. No one is sitting here picking fruit. The reality is no one's doing any physical labor. We are thinking and we are doing our best providing and applying our skills. The reality is that crunch does happen in the games industry. We do our best as an actual company to not do crunch, but I'm not going to lie, we crunch sometimes as well. The reality is that our customers have to face tough deadlines. Consumer demand is sometimes unrealistic, and they demand the actual capability and skill of our people to do their best. Now, I can speak from an industry standpoint that effectively one of the biggest issues that you hear and one of the biggest places where you hear about crunch is the United States. And you hear about it in the U.S. because you have people making anywhere between $70,000 to $150,000 a year complaining about the fact they got to spend 10, 12 hours a day working. But then you also have the flip side of that, which are people that work QA and QC jobs in the United States that make minimum wage and effectively are slaved and treated like second-class citizens. The reality is that there is almost a proclivity in the games industry to basically show and prove what you can do in order to stay in the industry. Because for how much money it makes, there's a relative few amount of people that are able to actually work within the industry because all the spots are taken. It's like you and I going to Hollywood saying we're going to be Brad Pitt. Us and 40,000 people, of which, you know, 28,000 people go home the next month because they didn't make it. It's the same thing in the games industry.
Well, the fact of the matter, Alexander, two wrongs don't make a right. And I mean, some of those conditions have been described as sweatshop-like. And I'm not sure whether Malaysians in general or Southeast Asians are making the same kind of salaries as the Americans do, between $75,000 to $100,000 a year. Of course,
yeah,
you're
of course
not, right?
Not. Of course, they're not. No,
and you also
no
talked about how project planning is basically one of the banes of the industry. Well,
absolutely.
Project planning is then translated down to the subcons like yourselves. And you've got to play by the rules of, because if you don't, someone else will take up the mantle and carry it on, right?
I got to tell you something. We are notorious for fighting and arguing with our customers. Because the reality is that we will not put ourselves in a position where we basically get abused because of their poor planning.
So how do you deal with it?
Because basically in the contract, and when we go and we look at any project, we come straight up and ask them a very direct question on whether or not they believe it's realistic what they're asking. And the thing is, in the end of the day, that the reality here is that you don't want to make your problem because of someone else's problem. The reality is, what it comes down to is you have to sit down and basically be reasonable about what is being asked and whether or not you think it's worthwhile to take on the project. And this is something, there are some customers that we will not work with because we know straightforward the way they look at things, call it an Americanism, they want to basically abuse the hell out of you because in the end of the day, they understand they're in a problem and they think you're supposed to help them because they gave you beads and blankets. And
almost,
it's like, no, thank you.
Almost a bit like Foxconn and Apple computers. But I mean, some of these examples.
No one saw themselves out of buildings.
Yeah, exactly. So who are some of these clients, Alex?
I mean, the thing is, like, I'm not going to get into the names, but I can tell you something right now. What it comes down to is basically this, is you can imagine that if you have a relative sizable position in the games industry, there are some companies, not necessarily the companies, but people that work for the company specifically, that somehow think that they've discovered the undiscovered country and want to come in and basically exploit the hell out of you.
I'm talking this morning to Alexander Fernandez, the chief executive of the gaming production company Streamline Media Group. Now, the other bane of the industry are the fact that there's things called cyclical layoffs. They're a way of life because obviously once products get completed, then the hiring spree that occurred prior, you know, obviously then you've got surplus workers in your books, and then they get laid off. And that's something that the gaming news website Kotaku talked about quite extensively. What's your comments on that?
Well, I mean, it depends. Again, it comes over like this. I mean, I think there is a cyclical nature of the games industry. The reality is that when you look at some of these projects that are getting released, I mean, they're being made with anywhere between 250 to 1,000 people working anywhere between 12 to 36 months. At one moment in time, the gravy train comes to an end. And in the end of that process, they actually sit down. In this case, they're usually publicly traded companies that look at their books and they say, well, listen, how are we going to make our quarter? It's a very sarcastic way of being. But the reality is the project's done. They look around. They said, well, I don't offer you lifelong employment. Again, most of these companies are in the United States. And they say, not my problem. See you later. And they cut them and they let them go.
Well, one of the stories that Kotaku wrote actually in April this year is they said that, and I'm not sure how recent these numbers are, but Streamline has 200 people, I think, and I think you did lay off 40.
Yeah, we did. We did a retrenchment, correct.
You did 40 people retrenched.
Yeah,
that's 20% of your workforce. In fact, 20% of your workforce. What happened there? And how did you deal with it in terms of the flight?
Straight off the bat, I mean, we basically sat down with customers that weren't exactly paying their bills, and then you have to make a very tough call. And we made the call. We had to lay people off.
So in terms of fallout, obviously 40 people out of 200 doesn't seem like it's a bit of a drop in the ocean, but in terms of...
Well, I wouldn't say that. They're people.
There are ramifications for the industry. How does Malaysia learn from this? How does Malaysia, you know, because obviously in the Japanese gaming industry, it's not as bad as it is in the US, right?
Yeah, okay, but see, this is the thing. Everybody wants to compare Japan to the rest of the world. Japan is in a very unique position where basically the companies themselves and the people that work within that industry, within that culture, there is a certain pride that comes in for doing your job. This is the same country in which people burn themselves out and work like crazy hours in order to deliver their job. It's the same country in which people basically respect each other to a maximum bane, where the contract between employer and employee is extremely strong. Let's look at the United States, where there's no worker protection. And the reality is your employees can walk out if they want to, or they can freak out if they want to. And the reality is they'll get sued. So the thing is, in the end of the day, we can't really compare Japan to the rest of the world. But what we can do is say, okay, here's the United States. Here we are in Malaysia. What can we do here to make sure that we're okay? Well, in Malaysia, we need to make sure everyone understands something. We're in a creative field. This is production. The reality is that these companies, they will basically have projects come in, they will have projects go out. And ultimately, if you want to remain relevant, if you want to remain employed within this industry, you have to understand the skills that you bring to the table have to grow with you. And that you also have to understand the business of the games industry. It's not enough just to understand the craft. You actually have to understand how the game is made, how you actually work, how the business actually functions so that you can time it. If you remember, it's like jump rope. You have to time the ins and outs. If you don't time it right, you get your foot caught in it, and then it goes down. So we have to look at it as an industry and be honest about the fact that high-tech, fast-growing, fast-moving, a lot of passion, a lot of creativity. The reality is, in the end of the day, they're still businesses.
So how do you structure contracts between worker and a company? Are they full-time? Are they freelance?
They're full-time. I mean, we do full-time contracts. We have FTEs. Some contracts we have freelancers on. Full-time employment, yeah. With benefits, which is, this is the crazy part about it, if you think about it. We offer, and a lot of us have to offer, full-time employment contracts in an industry that's project-based. You let me know how you do that.
Talk to me about streamlines people, right? Because people who are beyond 5 years in the gaming industry are called veterans.
Yeah.
That's the average lifespan. Less if you're a woman.
Yeah. You're lucky if you are. 65% of it have been in it less than 5 years.
That's right. So tell me about Streamline.
Well, I've been working in this industry for almost 20 years now.
But you're not in the trenches though, Alexander. Your guys are.
Oh my God. You know, tell me I'm not in the trenches. I work like a crazy ass all the time, nonstop. I mean, the thing is I co-own the company, so you better believe I'm in the trenches.
Okay.
That's how it works.
Okay.
It's called entrepreneurship.
It is. So you code the program along with your guys? I mean, what's the lifespan of
the programmer? I go out there and I do the business and I go out there and make sure that we get deals.
Okay. So the other thing within the industry is, of course, some of these accusations have been leveled at Telltale, one of the bigger gaming names out there.
They're out of business.
They're out of business.
They shut down.
There's a reason.
They couldn't afford it anymore.
Yeah, so one of the other things that, of course, has been sexual harassment suits in the business, workplace non-diversity.
Yeah, that's true.
Obviously,
absolutely.
Females have been compromised badly in the workplace and in the gaming industry. How bad of a problem is that in Malaysia?
That's actually a good question. So roughly right now, half of my management, senior management, are women. I mean, the women run my company. That's really how we structured our business. And we believe in diversity and we believe in culture. I have right now roughly 45 different nationalities and 25 different languages at the studio. We have women in leadership roles that are effectively running and making decisions from production all the way up to basically corporate and legal decisions. What we have found is basically this, is the strength of our business comes through the flexibility of thinking and the ability to actually include different people of all walks of life. Now, more importantly, because we were targeting a global industry, we could not be basically a monoculture, and that would not work within our business if we were like that.
So why is it that the linchpin of the global gaming industry, which is the U.S., has got such a bro culture in it?
You know what? If I knew the answer to that, I'd probably still be in America. I mean, the reality is, I think what happens is basically this, is that like this goes into a larger situation that's happening. I mean, I'm Hispanic. I moved and left my home to basically go out and seek my fortune and grow a business somewhere else in the world. I've been effectively overseas for almost 20 years in order to actually make and create something new for myself. The reality is that the U.S. is fundamentally going through a transformation process in which old white guys are basically having their last shrill of power. And you're seeing it play out all over the place. And that bro culture that you're talking about has played out because of the fact that no one put their asses in line.
Well, talking about white guys, right? Donald Trump is the whitest of the whites. He's actually leveled accusations at the global gaming industry for some of the mass shootings in America in the last, even say, two months, right?
I mean, honestly.
How would you respond to that?
How serious can you take someone who grabs him by the Trump handle?
Yeah.
How can you?
Yeah.
I mean, I'll be honest with you right now. Anything
is there any substance to that? I mean, even in New Zealand as well?
It was
portrayed as a video game.
Yeah, so here's the reality, is that the games industry is not making people do anything that they themselves don't have an already strange tendency to want to do. The reality is that basically there is no link between playing a game and the violence that people are doing. But there is something that comes down to basically responsibility and actually doing what needs to be done, which is mental health and gun control, specifically in the United States. It's not having the cheeseburger president get there and basically shoot his mouth off about guns and games and yet not look at his own chanchadas, as we say in Spanish, and realize that he needs to fix his own stuff. You can't criticize if you live in a glass house, especially if you're throwing rocks.
So Second Amendment out, in?
It's not about Second Amendment being out or in. It's about Second Amendment realizing that, you know, when they wrote that, we didn't have machine guns. They had muskets. Now, there's kind of a difference. You couldn't do mass killings. Now you can do it because, you know, someone smiled at you the wrong way. This is also one of the biggest issues that I see over there. And this is actually something that I think is fundamentally the benefit that Malaysia has, is that you're not in a situation where you have people basically blowing each other away with guns.
Alexander, it was a hugely entertaining 25 minutes talking to you. And I, you know, wish you the best of luck in terms of driving forward Malaysia's gaming and animation industry. Thank you for spending time with us.
Thanks a lot. It was fun to talk to you.
That was Alexander Fernandez, the chief executive of the gaming production company Streamline Media Group. Group BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, Frost & Sullivan's Malaysia Mobile Service Provider of the Year.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.